Blog Talk Radio.
Each day do you wake up and get out of bed? You got all these feelings rushing round in your head. You got that bout with doubt and neighbors singing the blues. Pick up the paper and it's all bad news. But you know in the end, happiness is your best friend. You can be what you wanna be. Oh, dare to step high and live like you're free. I said color, color your life happy. Color, every day you can choose. Color, color your life happy. If you choose happy, there's no way you can lose.
The difference between trial and triumph is a little bumpy. We all have ups and downs, but you can still be happy. If you're gonna step, you might as well step high.
If you choose happy, there's no way you can lose.
ColorYourLifeHappy.com. Get your happy on.
Welcome to Color Your Life Happy for Monday, October 5th. I'm your host, Flora Brown, coming to you live from Anaheim, California, as I do every Monday at 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. Our show today will inform, inspire, and encourage you, as always. In a moment, we will begin today's episode, Color Your Life Happy, How to Embrace Happiness. But first, I want to welcome all of you, my listeners. I am so honored that you made space in your schedule to join us. I know you have many other choices of things to do. I encourage you to participate by asking questions or adding comments. If you're on the phone lines, press #1 to let me know you have a question or a comment. If you're on the web chat, just type in your questions or your comments and I'll be able to see them and then I can read them on the air and respond to them. Let me remind you, too, that the show is live, so anything can happen. Lost signals is one of the most common things that happens, and it happens to me, too. So if your call is suddenly lost, just dial in again at 347-539-5700. And if my call is lost, I will do the same thing. And don't worry about missing anything because all the shows are recorded and available for you later under on-demand episodes on my show page. Again, I am Flora Brown. I'm an author, coach, inspirational speaker, and consultant. I'm also a mom of four and grandma of three, recently retired from 40 years of teaching junior high through university levels. The last 20 I taught critical thinking at Fullerton College. If you haven't already done so, I invite you to visit my website, ColorYourLifeHappy.com, where you can now invest in my new book, Color Your Life Happy, Create the Success, Abundance, and Inner Joy You Deserve. Now, my book is available on Amazon.com and in all major bookstores, but when you order from my website, you're going to get an autographed copy. It's full of stories, tips, and activities, all of which are going to speak to your inner desire to get the life you want and deserve. Now, on this radio show, Color Your Life Happy, we talk about ways to create the lasting happiness you deserve in all areas of your life. Each week, I typically interview guests from fields such as self-help, spiritual journeys, relationships, change and adversity, all of those things which contribute to lasting happiness. But today, I'm going to talk about my book and some of the key ideas that are presented in it, specifically the chapter that deals with embracing happiness. Now, many people ask me, why did I write my book? Well, I have observed all of my life. I grew up in a beauty shop where my mom was the beautician, and I observed her customers and over the years began to wonder why people always seem to be unhappy, disgruntled, and most importantly, why people didn't seem to think that they deserved happiness or that it was within their grasp. So that idea has stuck with me all of these years, and when I retired, I decided to address it in a book. Now, embracing happiness is an interesting concept. because so many people talk about pursuing happiness. And pursuing happiness just doesn't work because it isn't something you can catch. When the founders of our country said the right to pursue happiness, they really meant the right to practice happiness. Pursuit then did not mean go after. It meant to practice. Have you ever tried to pour lemonade from a pitcher into a small glass, lemonade, tea, whatever, but you pour too fast, and instead of it going in the pitcher or wherever, it ended up all over the counter. So you started again, but this time you paid attention, you poured slowly, and you succeeded in getting a glass of lemonade, splash-free. Now, embracing happiness is something like that. If you think you can just hurriedly grab it, then you won't likely experience it at all. In fact, you may end up feeling dissatisfied with your efforts symbolically spilled all over the counter. Now, before you can enjoy happiness, before you can even begin to go after it, you've got to embrace the idea that happiness can be yours. It's there for you to claim, and it always has been. We often talk about happiness as if it's lurking out there somewhere outside ourselves. We see evidence of happiness in other people, but we aren't sure we can experience it ourselves. The truth is, you can't be happy in the future unless you're happy right now. Now, let me repeat that. You can't be happy in the future unless you're happy right now, because all we have is right now. You can think about the past. You can imagine what the future will be like, but you can only be here now. The potential for happiness is already inside of you, just as the potential for a plant is already there inside of a seed. Let me share a story with you that happened to me. When I first retired, I was excited about doing a variety of things that I'd never made much time for, and one of them was to plant a vegetable garden. I was intrigued, not just with the idea of eating healthier meals, but I also wanted the chance to watch nature in action close up. So I bought a variety of herbs and vegetables from my local garden shop, and I planted them alongside my house. Within just a few days of watering, I observed that tiny little green signs of life were picking up through the dirt, and that's pretty exciting when you are creating a garden. I love zucchini, so I purchased two little potted plants of zucchini, and as they became recognizable, I saw, sure enough, one of them was forming this familiar green shape of zucchini, the dark green shape and the long shape that kind of, you're not sure if it's a cucumber or a zucchini, but the other plant was yellow, and it had this bulging bottom. So I went back and looked at the identification cards that had been stuck in the pots. I always keep those because I want to be sure what I'm doing. And both of the identification cards said squash zucchini. Soon it became apparent to me that something was wrong. No matter what the label said, one of the plants wasn't the zucchini I thought I had bought. It was obvious one of them had been mislabeled. Even though the yellow squash had been labeled zucchini, with my care and nurturing, it produced what it had inside of it all along, the potential to become a yellow squash. Like that plant, we have the potential to manifest our own happiness despite any labels others or we might give ourselves. And once we recognize this seed of happiness that's within us, then we're free to bring it forth. Now, your happiness is not the same as another person's happiness. Just as the zucchini plant yielded zucchini, the yellow squash plant yielded yellow squash, and any other plant is going to yield what that seed's potential is. I don't imagine that the zucchini ever wished that it could be a yellow squash, or vice versa. Each just grew into what it was meant to be. So I encourage you to allow yourself to be happy and grow into what you were meant to be. Now, Stacy Charter said something interesting. She said, "Don't rely on someone else for your happiness and self-worth. Only you can be responsible for that. If you can't love and respect yourself, no one else will be able to make that happen. Accept who you are completely. This includes the good and the bad. And make changes as you see fit. Don't make changes because you think someone else wants you to be different. I heard a saying one time that if you change for someone, later on you're going to want to change back because of that same someone. So it's important to find out what's in you. And by the way, happiness doesn't mean the absence of bad or the absence of sadness. Happiness means being able to manage both. Now, if you've been unhappy most of your life, then you may be astonished to know that you have the power to change your attitude. Or if you're a hardcore pessimist, you may even derive some pleasure from being negative, even though it eventually makes you sad. It may even lead to depression. But there seem to be people that take joy in being grumpy and griping, and perhaps that's their level of happiness. But you definitely want to avoid this prolonged sadness, because once depression has its evil grip on you, then you forget what it feels like to feel anything but depressed. Now, at this point, I want to caution you that if you suspect that you are depressed, if you have prolonged sadness, then that's definitely beyond the scope of my book or beyond the scope of this radio show. I urge you to get help, because there are so many ways that doctors, therapists, and others can help nowadays with depression. So don't tolerate it. It's not something you should become comfortable with and think that that's just the way it has to be. Now, listening to other people gripe and complain indicates just how much we restrict our own happiness by focusing on the negative. And I know it's easier to focus on the negative. For some reason, it seems to be much more appealing to our interests. For example, one day I was listening to a friend share a string of problems until it occurred to me that none of the things that she saw as problems were really that serious. So I asked her to tell me about the good things going on in her life. And she was taken aback by that. "What do you mean?" she asked. I said, "Well, let me help you get started. You have a loving husband. You're doing the work you love. You live in a beautiful home. You can afford to travel wherever you want, and you've raised two successful children." She just hadn't thought about those things because she was busy griping about whatever was going on at the moment. Now, not only do we get caught up in recounting our problems or what we see as problems, I think we actually enjoy sharing the negative more than rejoicing in the positive. Now, where does all this come from, and how do we learn to embrace happiness? Perhaps some of us think that dwelling on happy thoughts will jinx us. I know that's the way one of my relatives felt one Christmas. My husband and I separated right after Christmas one year, and one relative thought that I had jinxed the family because I would send out a Christmas letter highlighting the positive things about our family in Christmas letters. So because our breakup came right after Christmas, she said I had jinxed our marriage by sending out that positive letter. Now, many of us don't enjoy happiness because we have an aversion to it. We were brought up to mistrust happiness and to avoid embracing it for fear it wouldn't last. Sadly, this leaves us more comfortable with misery than with joy in our lives. To enjoy happiness, we must allow it to be. We must allow it to develop. I remember when I was a child that people would, and people still have this custom, of blowing their horn after they've gotten married as they drive through the street. You've seen newlyweds do that. And I used to hear my father say, every time we'd hear the horns indicating someone had just gotten married, he would say, "There goes another fool." And as a little girl, I was pretty hurt by that because I thought marriage was a grand thing to aspire to. But I heard the adults around me putting marriage down all the time. And so many of us grow up hearing happiness, positive things, things that should be positive or could be. We hear them being put down. And so we become uncomfortable. We lean towards sharing only negative rather than positive because nobody wants to be put down. Years ago, my husband and four children and I returned from a vacation in Yosemite National Park. It's a beautiful, spectacular wilderness. It's in the Sierra Nevada of California. I was sharing the highlights of our vacation with one of my friends, telling her about the trip by car, our stay in this tent cabin. This is a building that has solid walls, but it has a canvas roof and flaps for doors. So it's sort of a cabin and it's sort of a tent. And I was telling her about the horseback riding and the cooking by campfire. She was absolutely fascinated, but she was puzzled as to how we were able to plan such a vacation. So she asked me, how did you know about Yosemite and how did you get there? I was a little confused by her question, to tell you the truth, because I didn't know what she meant. What do you mean, how did we get there? She said, well, how did you figure out how to get there? So I responded, well, I went to the auto club and got a map. And they marked the route for us. There was information about the accommodations right on the back of the map and the phone numbers to call to make reservations. They gave you all the different types of living accommodations, from sleeping on the ground in a tent all the way to a luxury hotel. So they had a variety of sleeping arrangements there. Now, this was back in the days before the Internet. Yes, there were days before the Internet, but there were many resources available for planning vacations even then. Just as my friend was puzzled about how to plan a vacation, some people are puzzled about how to set up their lives. If you desire happiness, then you must plan and organize your life in such a way that it will result in happiness. Now, here are some things that you can do. These have worked for me and for other people. One thing you can do is spend time with people you enjoy. Now, this may seem pretty obvious to you, but we don't always practice this. My friend Marcia, for example, complained about her friend Shelley's annoying habit of always being short of money when they went out to lunch. It bothered Marcia, but she just paid the check and complained to other people about her cheap friend, Shelley. When I asked her, why do you continue to go out to lunch with Shelley? And she said, because she's my friend. Now, Marcia felt stuck. She didn't realize that no one else viewed Shelley as her friend. Worst of all, Marcia didn't know that she had the power to change how and with whom she spent her time. It's inevitable that as you go through life, you're going to have people move in and out of your life. So choosing who you want to spend time with is your right, and you're not being evil, cruel, or mean to spend less time with people or no time with people you don't enjoy. Another thing you can do is avoid toxic people and sad situations. Now, this is one of my favorite topics because I've been on a mission the last few years to avoid and get rid of toxic people in my life. Now, you don't have to look far to find these people. Some of them have names that you recognize, like mom, dad, sister, brother, uncle, who enjoy complaining and griping about their personal problems, the world's problems, and so on. Now, acknowledging what's going on in the news and fretting about it a bit are harmless. But constantly being exposed to people who revel in not only bad news, but they love to spread gossip. They love to repeat the gory details of the latest mass murder, or they can retell blow by blow the pain they suffered during their last surgery. All of these things can be exhausting. And they're destined to pull you down, to pull down your mood as well. Now, if horror movies make you upset or loud music disturbs you, you probably stay away from these situations. Likewise, keep your environment pleasing by not allowing toxic people to disturb the harmony and tranquility. In my book, I talk later about setting up an environment in your home where your children are growing up that absolutely gets rid of toxic people, because they poison your environment just as poison into your food would damage your health or maybe even kill you. Okay, a third thing you can do is to take care of your spiritual and your emotional needs. Now, what am I talking about? Well, every one of us can benefit from taking a step back from our day-to-day life to get quiet, to reflect, quiet our emotions. If you neglect to do this, you're definitely asking for trouble, because driving around in your car, for example, without maintenance, eventually your car is going to suffer and even collapse from neglect. Well, your body, your mind need renewal. You have to take time to renew your mind and your body so you can have energy. The strength of your mind and emotions are needed to handle the challenges of life, as well as to foster your own personal growth. Now, without making time to do this, you set yourself up for burnout, exhaustion, apathy, and even depression. Now, in his very popular book, The Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, Dr. Stephen Covey calls habit number 7, sharpening the saw. Now, he tells in this story about a man who was cutting firewood for his family. He was working and sweating and straining. An observer could see that this chore was really a challenge and asked him whether his saw was sharp. The man said that it sure didn't seem too sharp. The observer then recommended that he take a few minutes and sharpen the saw. The man replied, "I'm too busy sawing to make time to sharpen my saw." Now, taking care of your emotional, spiritual needs is sharpening your saw, renewing yourself. You have to make time for that. Now, you don't have to go to any particular church or subscribe to any certain religious beliefs, but you must find what fills you spiritually. Now, some of the ways other people have done it is to meditate. And you don't have to be a yogi. You don't have to do something fancy to meditate. You can just get quiet, quiet your mind. Reading motivational quotes also helps a lot of people. Or listening to inspirational speakers. There are plenty of them on the internet, on the radio, and your bookstore too. Or what about taking a nature walk? I'm fortunate to live in an area that actually has some beautiful parks. But there's also even a nature center. When you step into that area, it's like being far, far away with brooks and trails to follow. But wherever you are, you can take a walk. You can enjoy beautiful music. All of these things help restore and renew you. You can also meet your emotional needs by forming meaningful relationships and associations with others. Whatever enables you to fortify your mind and your spirit for dealing with every day will enable you not only to cope with life, but also to enjoy a happier life. Another thing you must do is show gratitude for all the good in your life. Yes, there is some good in your life, and if you stop to take a look at some of those things, it can help you tremendously. Now, there is a professor named Dr. Robert Emmons, and he's the editor-in-chief of a magazine or journal called Positive Psychology, and he's also a professor at UC Davis. Now, he wrote a book called Thanks, How the New Science of Gratitude Can Make You Happier, and as part of writing this book, he conducted research on gratitude, its components, and its benefits. He admits that when he began his research on gratitude, he didn't expect it to be as deep and complex as it turned out to be. But now he states that gratitude is literally one of the few things that can measurably change people's lives. Can you believe that? Just showing gratitude, showing thanks can change your life. He points out that being grateful includes acknowledging good and recognizing that it comes from outside yourself. It doesn't matter whether the gift you're thanking someone for is material or non-material. When we recognize the gift can be just a gift of their presence. Thank the giver or express thankfulness for the gift. When we do that, we are transformed. Now, he identifies a number of benefits of gratitude and its connection to happiness. Three of those benefits are: practicing gratitude can increase happiness levels around 25%. Number two, he found that keeping a gratitude journal for as little as 3 weeks will improve your sleep and increase energy. And in that, he means take a blank journal. It doesn't have to be a fancy journal. It doesn't even have to be a journal. It can be a notebook, a spiral notebook, a pad, whatever you have. And before going to sleep, make a list of all the things that you are grateful for. To help you get started, one of them should be you're still alive and breathing. If you're fortunate enough to live in a house, that's another thing. And so on, if you have a job, or if you have the energy to look for a job. So many things we can be thankful for. And he's saying make a list of those things. The third thing he says is increasing happiness by practicing gratitude is not just a short-term fix. This will sustain your happiness over a long period of time. So if you haven't been doing so, show gratitude in your life. One of the things I've been doing lately is to let people know that they've made a difference in my life. So many times we have so many people who pass through our lives, and we appreciate them, and yet we may never tell them. So I've been making a practice of telling people, you make a difference. You have made a difference in my life, and thanking them for that. They need to hear that while they're still alive, and I need to say it while I'm still alive to say it. Another thing that you can do is to adopt a winning attitude. Now, how we think about the future, most researchers and psychologists put these thoughts into two groups, optimism and pessimism. Now, an optimist is often defined as someone who sees a glass as half full, while they describe a pessimist who sees that same glass as half empty. Even though we've been told that optimists tend to be more successful, folks stuck in pessimism are hard-pressed to turn themselves around. Part of the reason is pessimists are just accustomed to seeing the dark side, and they've just lost sight of the brighter side. Or sometimes I think pessimists believe that it's better to expect the worst and then you'll never be disappointed. One of my daughters showed a pessimistic side at an early age. When she was in elementary school, she would complain and work herself into a tizzy every time a new concept was introduced. She would just wail, "I can't do it, I can't do it." I mean, once she mastered addition and the teacher introduced subtraction, she'd come home crying. She would repeat her doubts and fears. And once she mastered subtraction, she'd go through the same thing with multiplication. I had to continually remind her how she had conquered new things in the past. And soon this helped her to calm down and learn the new concept. But the fear of the new, the expectation that things were going to be hard, were blocking her. And pessimists put themselves into a vicious cycle. There's an anonymous quote where this person said, "A pessimist is one who feels bad when he feels good, for fear he'll feel worse when he feels better." Now, pessimists miss the good that's all around them. Khalil Gibran said, "The optimist sees the rose and not its thorns. The pessimist stares at the thorns, oblivious to the rose." Oscar Wilde said, "A pessimist is one whom, when he has a choice of two evils, chooses both." So when confronted with a problem or a challenge, what we all do this, is we tell ourselves stories. Optimists tell themselves hopeful stories, expecting that they can succeed. They expect to succeed. They expect to accomplish their goals. Pessimists tell themselves sad stories, expecting or fearing that they will fail. Let something bad or challenging happen, and pessimists immediately think of the worst-case scenario. This inevitably results in misery, but pessimists repeat it many times. The results are not only unhappiness, but in extreme cases, prolonged sadness. Now, some pessimists do succeed in spite of their negativity. They know they're pessimists, and they're determined to overcome their negative outlook and expectations. So these people work to create success. They work hard to create success. They take an extreme view of optimism, so they can't see themselves as optimists, but they work to overcome their pessimism in order to succeed. They see an optimist as someone who skips through the meadows in the face of danger, oblivious to potholes, singing Bobby McFerrin's popular song, "Don't Worry, Be Happy." But this isn't exactly true about optimism, but this is how many pessimists see it. Now, some people think being optimistic has drawbacks. Maintaining hope in the face of danger or bad news may not always be the best strategy. There's an author named Julie Norum. She wrote The Positive Power of Negative Thinking. And she believes that while optimism is great, some folks are prone to anticipating the worst. For these people, trying to put on a happy face doesn't work. Because these defensive pessimists, she calls them, believe in Murphy's Law, they quell their anxiety with careful planning and defensive strategies. When planning a dinner party, for example, a defensive pessimist considers the disasters that could occur if certain people sit next to each other. An optimist, on the other hand, would see this as an unnecessary worry. Now, like Norm views pessimists and optimists at extreme ends of a personality continuum, I personally don't think that, using her example, planning for seating people at a dinner party is necessarily pessimistic. I think it's pretty smart to set amiable people next to each other. A dinner party is certainly not the time you want to work on people's personal issues. So placing people who are amiable near each other can be wise planning. Now, some people think, well, maybe there's benefits to being a pessimist. In their research study, Gibson and Sanbanmasu, hard to say name, so let me call him David. Brian and David did a research study called Optimism, Pessimism, and Gambling, the Downside of Optimism. Now, they think that when it comes to gambling anyway, the pessimists tend to take or make safer choices than their optimistic counterparts. So they believe that an optimist is one in this situation who doesn't know when to quit, whereas a pessimist does. Again, they join in those who believe that optimism and pessimism are opposites and that we have to either be one or the other. They think that an optimist is so expectant of good things that they don't even have sense enough to duck when they see a big rock coming. I think that's a pretty extreme view of optimism. I think an optimist believes that the world is mostly good and expects things to go well, but at the same time, an optimist can have good judgment to evaluate situations and determine whether they're good for them. Likewise, a pessimist may believe that the world is mostly bad and expect things to go wrong, but they can still have good judgment to evaluate a situation and participate in ventures that they believe will go well. I think that we all have a little of both in us and that these two extremes are just for conversation and are not really actual. But if you want to embrace happiness in spite of what some see as the benefits of being pessimistic, countless studies have shown that an optimistic outlook enables us to live longer, to be healthier, find positive solutions, look upon adversity as temporary, and persevere. If you lean toward pessimism, there's some good news for you. You can become more optimistic. How? Well, by telling yourself a new story. When a problem or a challenge arises, it's important to be aware of the story that pops in your head. So many times the pessimist story is, "I can't handle this, I'm going to fail, there's no point in even trying." Whereas an optimist thinks, "I'm quite capable, I can handle this, let's see what I can do." So if you're a pessimist, as soon as you catch yourself saying that you can't handle something or predicting that you're going to fail, just flip your script Talk back and talk louder than the flawed script you've been following in the past. Challenge your old story with a new one. And instead of saying, I can't handle this, say, I can handle this. I've succeeded many times before. Now, where do I begin? William Shakespeare said in Julius Caesar, cowards die many times before their deaths. The valiant never taste of death but once. So many of the stories we play out in our heads never really happen, but we build up a lot of fear and anxiety unnecessarily. I ran across an old story in a blog, and I want to share it with you right now. One day, a farmer's donkey fell down into a well. The animal cried piteously for hours as the farmer tried to figure out what to do. Finally, he decided the animal was old and the well needed to be covered up. Anyway, it just wasn't worth the trouble to try to retrieve the donkey. So he invited all his neighbors to come over and help him. They all grabbed shovels and they began to shovel dirt into the well. At first, the donkey realized what was happening, and he cried out horribly. Then, as they continued to shovel, to everyone's amazement, the donkey quieted down. A few shovel loads later, the farmer finally looked down the well, and he was astonished at what he saw. With each shovel of dirt that hit his back, the donkey did something amazing. He shook it off and took a step up. As the neighbors continued to shovel dirt on top of the animal would shake it off and take another step up. Pretty soon, everyone was amazed to see the donkey step up over the edge of the well and happily trot off. In the end, the donkey found the right attitude toward the dirt hitting his back. He didn't accept it as a death sentence. He shook off the dirt and took a step up. Now, like the donkey in this story, at some point in our lives, we will find ourselves in deep trouble, distress, or what may seem like a hopeless situation. Now, our first reaction, because we are human, may be to cry, to lament our troubles, to curse, and fight against our situation. But the sooner we turn from these fruitless reactions and calm ourselves, the sooner we can discover positive actions, shake off our troubles, and rise to a satisfying solution. We cannot control or change others, but we can definitely control our reaction to outside circumstances. I'm going to pause here for a moment to give you a message from one of my sponsors. One of my sponsors is New Hope Presbyterian Church of Orange, California. Leslie Sykes, co-anchor of KABC TV News, is going to MC an orchestral concert called Rhapsody of Love that will benefit local school programs in the Orange County area. This concert takes place on Sunday, November 8th, from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m., at the Orange County Arts Pavilion. This is located at 801 North Main Street in Santa Ana. Now, this program, Rhapsody of Love, will feature the Elevation Orchestra. This orchestra was created by Ryan Cross, a world-renowned cellist and bassist, as well as television and film score composer. Now, Cross has commissioned arrangers who have written for Michael Jackson, Earth, Wind, and Fire, Stevie Wonder, and Alicia Keys. The Hollywood actor and singer Keith David will also make a special appearance at this concert. Pastor Goodjoin of New Hope Presbyterian Church says, with programming ranging from classical to Motown, spirituals to jazz, music lovers will be treated to an evening where instruments and voices blend to create soul-stirring and memorable emotional power. So get your tickets for this event. I'll be there at www.newhopenlikeinnancycclikeincharlesdlikeindog.org. Go there, get your tickets, and show up. I will be there to greet you. Again, this is Rhapsody of Love, a concert that will benefit local school programs. It takes place on Sunday, November 8th, from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. at the Orange County Arts Pavilion. That's located at 801 North Main Street in Santa Ana, California. Tickets are available at www.newhopenlikenancycliketcharlesdlikedog.org. Back to our program for today. We are winding down, and I want to encourage all of you to heed the things, the tips I've shared with you. Those tips came from the chapter on embracing happiness in my new book, Color Your Life Happy. You can go over to coloryourlifehappy.com and learn more about it. That was chapter 3, by the way. I want to close with the following words for you. Embracing happiness means accepting yourself the way you are, allowing yourself to be happy, aligning yourself with happiness, and adopting a positive attitude. Now, none of this means that things are going to go perfectly in your life and you will not encounter problems, upsets, and sad moments. We all do. But you must take responsibility for your happiness. And while building relationships is part of it, don't count on others for your self-worth. Spend time with people you enjoy and avoid toxic people who enjoy creating negative situations. Take care of your spiritual and emotional needs to keep your mind and your spirit strong. Acknowledge those who have been good to you and have made a difference in your life, for gratitude is one of the easiest and the quickest ways to sustain happiness. Accept and become comfortable with the fact that life has uncertainty. Happiness doesn't require you to display a nonstop cheery disposition, but it does mean taking responsibility for your own life. As soon as you give up the notion of being perfect and are willing to risk going after what you want, then you have already opened your arms to embrace happiness. Marcus Aurelius Antonius said, "Such as are your habitual thoughts, such also will be the character of your mind. For the soul is dyed by the color of your thoughts." You know I like that quote. We're near the end of our show today, and I urge all of you to share what I've discussed here with you with family and friends. And you know that the recording of this episode will be available shortly after at blogtalkradio.com/Flora Brown. You can return there at any time to hear it. I want to thank you for tuning in today and invite you to join me again next Monday, October 12th, at 11 a.m. I have an exciting show for you next week, so take a look at the show page and join me then. Let me remind you, too, to visit my website, coloryourlifehappy.com. Not only can you order my new book over there, but I have a newsletter, and it has been wonderfully received. I've gotten some great feedback from it. So sign up for the newsletter there, and once you're into receiving the newsletter, you will also be able to become a member free of charge to our members-only area on my website. Only members can get in there, and I've posted videos and many other things for you. I'm your host, Flora Brown of Color Your Life Happy, the radio show designed to help you uncover the joy you deserve. I'm coming to you live from Anaheim, California, as I do every Monday at 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. I'm going to ask you to have a blessed week and to color your life happy. See you next week.
Color your life.